Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist, a podcast discussing hope and solutions in the climate space and providing resources for how you can take action to help create a better future for all living beings and the planet. It's your host, Taylor Gannis, and today we're going to be discussing factory farming and its impacts on people, animals, and the planet, and we're also going to look at how factory farms violate human and animal rights and leads to environmental destruction. But before we start, like in school, I have a little homework for you all. But if you're driving or riding a bike, please don't do it now. Please do that later. Or just internally think about it. But I would like you to just jot down or think about anything you know about factory farming. This could be just like your thoughts on factory farming. It could be facts that you know about factory farming or you think you know. Only you are going to see this. So literally anything. And then I want you to revisit this after the episode and see if your facts were correct, if you thought about facts, or if the thoughts you had on factory farming, if those changed it or shifted throughout the episode as we talk about different things, or maybe this episode raises some questions for you that you would like answered. And in that case, you can always write them into me on Instagram at hopeful_environmentalist, or if you don't have Instagram, you can always send them on via email, which is hopefulenvironmentalistpod@gmail.com. Always happy to answer questions or just hear your thoughts if you're interested on sharing your thoughts. But I think this is a really cool little, I don't know if I want to call it an assignment, but an assignment, I guess, to do some internal thinking as we're learning. Something that I've started to do, and I think it really helps me understand where I start at and where I kind of am starting to head to as I become more educated on certain things. Hey, hopeful environmentalists. Before we get into this episode, we just quickly wanted to plug in that if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Reviews help me not only better understand what you guys like to hear, but also gets the podcast more widely shared with other audiences. And if this is accessible to you, we do have a Patreon where you can financially support The Hopeful Environmentalist, as currently right now, The Hopeful Environmentalist is fully self-funded. For as little as $1 a month, you can help sustain the work environmentalists are doing to protect our planet. You can find that link in the description of this podcast. Your support is so greatly appreciated, and I hope you enjoy this episode. But now that we have that out of the way and you have your assignment, I'd love to introduce our speaker. Mia Fernahue is the Senior Director of Global Animal Welfare of the Humane League, a global nonprofit that exists to end the abuse of animals raised for food. Mia has been working in farmed animal welfare science and advocacy for over 15 years, specializing in laying hen welfare since 2013. Mia has extensive experience of assessing chicken welfare on farms, has developed higher welfare industry standards, improving the lives of birds from hatch to slaughter, and has advised industry and government on laying hen welfare and policy. Mia joined THL in 2021 to provide technical welfare support to THL and OWA. She now leads a team of technical specialists with considerable industry, welfare, and research experience. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Mia to the podcast. So hi, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. We are super excited to have you on and to talk about this really crucial intersectional issue.
Thanks for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Yeah, so do you mind my first just talking a little bit about what factory farms and slaughterhouses are and how they negatively impact the environment?
Okay, so the Humane League works to end the worst abuses of animals in factory farms, animals that are farmed for food. And factory farms really are just very intensive farms where huge numbers of animals are farmed to get maximum output from minimum inputs, minimum interventions. And this doesn't only have a really terrible impact on animal welfare, it also has a significant impact on the environment. So I think when we think of, or certainly when I think of environmental impacts, I'm thinking about global warming, I'm thinking about how we can mitigate climate change. And to my mind, I immediately go to kind of using cars or renewable energy sources or whether I should fly or not. But actually, one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions and climate change is animal agriculture. It contributes as much to greenhouse gas emissions as all transport forms put together. And it contributes 60% when we're looking at meat and dairy production, 60% of all agricultural related emissions. So it's huge. The impact is massive. If we look at the beef industry by itself, this is the leading cause of methane emissions. Methane is much more potent in terms of its warming potential for the environment, 86 times more potential for global warming than carbon dioxide. So the beef industry alone is having a huge impact on global warming. But it's not only around GHGs, it's not only around global warming. Animal agriculture is also the biggest cause of deforestation. So we're farming animals on such a huge scale globally. We're talking tens of billions of animals farmed every year across the globe, 70 billion meat chickens alone. And in order to rear and feed and house that number of animals, we need to clear forest to make way for crops to feed them and for land to farm them. So we're clearing forests simply to feed our appetite for animal protein. And in doing that, we're also removing the ability of these forests to remove CO2 from the atmosphere. So we're generating CO2 and other emissions through animal transport, through animal housing, but also removing the Earth's natural ability to control and to absorb those emissions. So it's a real kind of double whammy.
I think something that I think about a lot is when I talk to people about animal farming and factory farming, and they're like, well, what does that have to do with the environment? And I'm like, well, it has everything to do with the environment. And just if we think about it from a basic level of like how we treat animals is how we treat the planet. So if we treat everything with kindness, we're more likely to want to take care of it. And if we understand things, we're more likely to want to take care of it. So same thing with animals, same thing with the planet, same thing with people. So thank you for bringing up all of those statistics. It's really, I think, not a lot of people think about those, like how it's interconnected and a very intersectional issue. So kind of on that same topic of intersectionality is how does this all negatively impact people?
I guess, so the things that I've described around climate change and also air and water pollution are huge from animal agriculture, deforestation. Of course, these things are having impacts on humans from, you know, like health problems and severe weather. We're seeing droughts, we're seeing floods and like huge changes to our environment. But I think there are also some more subtle impacts. It's not just these kind of big things. And I think I listened to your previous podcast and you were talking about the opposite. So the impacts of the climate change on foods that we love, like coffee and wine and and chocolate and all the things that we want to eat. But it's also the reverse. And if we think about, I don't know about you, but I certainly wouldn't want to live in close proximity to a factory farm. They throw out dust and they, you know, ammonia and all of these emissions. They're smelly. There's traffic, there's noise. And they clearly cause risks to people living in the vicinity, to their family's health. And I can think they can be absolutely devastating for the lives of people who live nearby. The other thing is, you know, we're talking about housing animals in vast sheds or like enormous numbers of animals in feedlots. And when we have these large numbers of animals in one place, they're producing an awful lot of waste. So livestock in the US, for example, is producing 5 times the amount of manure waste compared to humans. And that waste isn't being treated in the sewage system like human waste is. You know, it's being stored in what's rather exotically called lagoons. So these huge kind of lakes of sewage, in essence, and that's contaminating groundwater. It's contaminating the air. And this nutrient pollution, as it's called, is taken care of by the Environmental Protection Agency to the tune of $157 billion taxpayer dollars every year. So, you know, people aren't thinking about these sort of costs. They're not thinking about the like the monetary financial costs of agricultural systems, you know, and it's clear that we can't really continue to farm animals in these numbers. You talked about intersectionality as well, and there's a human cost as well as an environmental and an animal cost to this. Like stepping away a little bit from the environmental theme, food poisoning outbreaks of Salmonella and E. coli and Campylobacter, they frequently occur and they're attributed primarily to poultry. Antimicrobial resistance is another one, fueled by overuse of antibiotics in the livestock industry. And that like seriously threatens our ability to deal with human infections. Like now, it's already happening, but also in the future. So the impacts on humans can be wide-ranging, they can be significant, and some of them can be devastating, and some of them could be, I don't know, like not being able to enjoy chocolate so much anymore.
Yeah, and just talking about, like, for some people to understand, like, the pure number of how many animals are we're factory farming each year. You know, I lived in North Dakota, which is in the Midwest of the U.S. for a little bit, and cows actually outnumber people in the state. And I don't think, like, for people who are from cities or who live in the east and west of the U.S., specifically the U.S., because I can really only talk about the U.S. since I only know about the U.S.'s numbers, but, you know, people don't understand that, like, cows and animals in these horrible conditions are outnumbering us. And
yeah, I mean, they're outnumbering people. They're outnumbering wild animals. Like, it's kind of mind-blowing. It's difficult to imagine. So I can understand why people can't really engage with it, because, you know, I think we're certainly being outnumbered.
But then, yeah, also talking about, you know, how we don't want these things in close proximity to humans, like factory farms and the impacts it has on humans. Some good news is, recently, a city in the U.S., the first city in the U.S. to ban factory farms, was Berkeley, California, this like a week ago. So this was really good news. And hopefully we can start to see this being more widely considered as policy and legislation. So
yeah, I really hope so. Yeah. And something you said earlier as well about, you know, when we care for animals, we're probably more likely to care for the environment. And I think that's probably true. And so, you know, in our mission to end the abuse of animals on these factory farms, I think when farmers are more engaged, or policymakers are more engaged in how we treat animals, then they also start to think about those impacts on the environment. And quite often we see that the producers, the farmers that are using kinder, more humane methods of farming are also implementing environmental mitigation strategies. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. Some like good quote that I heard, I don't know who said it, but it was like, if slaughterhouses had like glass walls, everyone would be like plant-based. And I think that's also a quote that I just absolutely love. And think when more people engage with certain things, and we're so detached from our food systems, that if we actually saw what goes on, we would not be doing the same things that we're doing right now.
I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think it's limited to slaughterhouses either. I think if most people saw how a chicken was farmed on a standard commercial farm, they probably wouldn't want to eat those chickens.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So now can we talk about some examples of what industrial agriculture is and like what that looks like?
Yeah, so factory farms, they're referred to by the industry as CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, which is in essence what they are. It's about getting animals to be as productive as possible with the least input. And so my area of expertise really is egg-laying hens. So the birds, the chickens that have been genetically selected to produce a large, consistent number of eggs over their lifetime. So what we see now with egg-laying hens is that they are roughly producing an egg a day. And this is putting an enormous strain on their bodies. Producing an egg a day has huge calcium demands, and some of that calcium can come from the food that those birds are eating, but some of it also comes from their bones. So when they spend a year and a half laying eggs, that's depleting the calcium reserves in their bones, and they end up with weak bones. And lots of egg-laying hens in commercial systems will have painful bone breakages. So this is an example of an intensive system, and the one that the Humane League is focused on at the moment for ending. Now, there are 8 billion hens, roughly, globally, and the majority of those are still kept in cages. So when we're thinking about this kind of input versus output, we've got genetic strains that are very, very productive, but the industry also wants to limit their energy expenditure and how much food they need to give them. So to do that, and to limit the amount of space they're given, so because like space is expensive, right? They're put in cages. So this is like true industrialization, I think, of animal agriculture. We've got billions of hens every year housed in wire mesh cages. They can't stretch their wings. They can't stretch their legs. They can't dust bathe. They can literally stand, maybe turn around, eat, drink, and lay an egg. And they do that for their entire lives. Now, for me, I would call this systematic cruelty. These animals spend their whole lives feeling constant discomfort and probably chronic pain, almost certainly chronic pain. And it's the same for, well, very similar for meat chickens. They're not kept in cages, but they have been selectively bred to produce an awful lot of meat very quickly. And when we look at meat chickens, and again, this is global, this is systemic, this isn't something that happens in the US or with a certain retailer, it is pretty much standard production across the globe. Meat chickens will be adult size by the time they're 5 weeks old. And this means that they have very immature organ systems, their bones haven't developed properly. So they can't walk properly. They might have suffer from cardiac and respiratory problems and high levels of disease. And because they grow so fast, it means they need a very high quality protein feed. And that high quality protein feed is usually soy from deforested land. So that's where it ties back into this environmental concern. We're having to deforest simply to grow soybeans to feed to these poor birds that grow far faster than they naturally should.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen this firsthand. I volunteered at a local farm sanctuary, and we got rescued meat chickens. And when they came in, it was like so disheartening, like to see how much larger they were than just a normal, not produced for meat chicken was. And they could barely walk. They ended up passing away within a few weeks because of all of their health complications. So it's really, I think people don't understand, again, when you don't see it, when you're not looking at it and seeing it right in your face, you're not understanding, okay, like this is not okay. Like, this is not okay. For simply just for animal rights, for having compassion and empathy. Yeah, so that's definitely something that was quite disheartening to see.
Mm.
You know, we talked about deforestation a little bit. So how do our current meat consumption culture cause deforestation in places like the Amazon? So like for me, I'm based in New York, but my purchasing habits impact deforestation in the Amazon. So we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to think on things on a local scale, right? So the local impacts of factory farming, they can be devastating, but they're probably not affecting you in New York. I don't suppose there's too much farming going on in New York. It's really the global impacts of factory farming that are impacting the planet. And I think the real problem is the volume that we're consuming, the sheer number of animals that we're rearing. And in some places, this is still increasing. So, I mean, the EU and the US, where like consumption's already high, production of chickens is still increasing. It seems utterly insane to me. It's the volume that we're producing that means we need to clear land, to grow feed, and to, you know, to put up sheds to grow these animals. So we're clearing land, we're making way for farming in order that we can consume more and more chicken every year, which is, you know, unnecessary. So if we look at cattle ranching is currently responsible for 80% of the deforestation that's going on in the Amazon. And that's been happening since the 1970s. It's been the vast majority of deforestation of the Amazon has been due to cattle ranching. So the burger that you're eating in New York is quite possibly, very well may have been reared in what was previously pristine rainforest. And the fried chicken that you're eating in New York has probably been fed with soy grown on a recently cleared plantation. So we're clearing the Amazon, you know, 10% of the world's biodiversity is there. It's a natural carbon sink. You know, all of these wonderful benefits that it brings to us, we're clearing it to make way for protein consumption so that humans can eat more and more protein. I mean, ranching isn't the only source of deforestation, but it's absolutely the biggest.
Yeah. Another thing that I like to bring up when we talk about deforestation is how our consumption habits also directly lead to land grabs and illegal destruction of indigenous lands. That's also something that, you know, when we talk about the intersectionality of all of these things, they can all be tied back together. So that's just something I also love to bring up when having these conversations. So would love to now talk and switch to your current campaign against crumble cookies and your campaign against the global egg industry. I love a good campaign against large corporations. So I would love to talk about this.
Yeah, I love a good campaign against global corporations too. Our current campaign at the Humane League is against crumble cookies. We've targeted crumble cookies because they're the fastest growing dessert chain in the US, but sadly, they don't yet have a cage-free egg sourcing policy. They're selling 1 million cookies every day. They've got 1,000 outlets, and those cookies contain eggs from caged hens, which, you know, lots of consumers won't know about. So we're trying to raise awareness for consumers by being outside Crumble Cookie stores as they open. And we're asking them at a corporation level to adopt a cage-free policy. And the thing is, it's, you know, they're falling way behind the rest of the US restaurant brands. Like almost every US restaurant brand has a cage-free policy. Their kind of direct competitors like Krispy Kreme and Dairy Queen, they already have commitments for 2025 and they're following through on them. So, it, you know, they're really falling behind. They're laggards in the industry, in essence. And we're asking them to get with the program. Listeners to your podcast can take action. So they can go to crumblecruelty.com and take actions, and also let Crumble know that it's not acceptable to cage hens in 2025. In terms of our global campaigns, we run global campaigns alongside our alliance members in the Open Wing Alliance. So this is a coalition of like-minded groups also working to end the abuse of hens in cages by holding companies to account and asking them to take corporate commitments. Our current campaign is against companies that already actually have corporate commitments, but companies that aren't reporting. So they're not telling us what their progress looks like. They have deadlines for 2025. We're currently asking Norwegian Cruise Line to tell us what their progress looks like. We're really holding them accountable and making sure that they fulfill their promise. We started the global campaign with other companies that also had commitments, and we've already got Columbina and Wagamama's both reporting. So we've had success in that campaign to date, but we're still waiting on Norwegian Cruise Line to start telling us what their progress looks like.
Yeah, I never understand why an industry is leading into a positive direction, why some stay back. And I'm like, why? What's the point? But I want to bring this up now, especially during everything that happened last week in the US, is when we feel disheartened about what's going on in the world and government, we can always hold corporations accountable. Without government, we just have to, when we come together and use collective action and community and grassroots organizing, we can hold corporations accountable. We can switch industries to better, more cleaner, sustainable practices. So that's something that I'd love to bring up during such a hard and difficult time. But now, kind of switching gears a little bit, there's an interesting article on your webpage that talks about global pandemics and how they've started throughout history and what can be projected for the future while we look back at history. The article discusses how greater meat consumption can be a huge factor in starting another pandemic, and the reasoning is not what many people would think. So can you please tell us a little bit about this and the correlation between our current meat practices and global pandemics?
Yeah, this is sort of an interesting and quite scary one, I guess. So nearly all human diseases have emerged from zoonotic transmission, so from animals to humans. But recently, the vast majority of emerging diseases have come from animals. So about 75% of new human diseases have come from animals. And this is because of a few factors, but the way that factory farming contributes to this is that we are housing huge numbers of animals in one place. We're also farming huge numbers of animals across the globe. So we've suddenly got these like huge populations of animals. And within a shed, so I'm going to use chickens as an example, but within a chicken shed, we've got, let's say, 50,000 chickens. They're genetically very similar. So if there's a disease incursion, they don't have differing resistance to the, let's say, virus. They are stressed, so their immune systems are compromised. They're living in very close confines to one another, and they're sitting in their own excrement for the period of that they're reared for. And this is really problematic. This is kind of a perfect recipe for the spread of disease. So if a producer, say, let's say a farmer, walks into his shed with a goose dropping on his boot, that goose has avian influenza. Now, avian influenza is endemic in wild populations, and it doesn't cause an enormous problem. But when that virus gets into a chicken shed, it can spread really rapidly to almost every single bird in that shed, because they're genetically similar, because they're stressed, because of all the things I mentioned a moment ago. And now you've got a virus with tens of thousands of hosts. So every single chicken, let's say every single chicken in that shed has this virus. Those viruses are mutating all of the time. They have billions of mutations every single day. And the risk is that one of those mutations becomes dangerous. And that's sort of what's happened in the chicken population. And in, we've seen a pandemic in terms of bird flu in poultry populations, where we're having to cull huge numbers of birds because they're contracting this disease. And it's mutated to become a sort of benign, low pathogenic strain to being a very highly pathogenic strain, which is killing like huge numbers of birds. And the risk is that it stops just being chicken to chicken transmission, but becomes human to human transition. So we've already seen chickens transmitting bird flu to humans that are in close contact with them. So it tends to be poultry workers, slaughterhouse workers. It's not the general population. So at the moment, the risk is very low for the human population of contracting bird flu. But the risk is that it will mutate and will be able to transmit from human to human. And that's when we have a pandemic risk. And it's not just me saying this. It's not just animal protection groups saying this. The World Health Organization, the FAO, they're both highlighting this increased demand for animal protein being a main risk factor for the development of future pandemics. And if we look at the bird flu, when it has been transmitted to humans, it's had a really high fatality rate, like 50%. So if we start getting human-to-human transmission, it's really quite dangerous and scary. So we have to think about the realities of having to dramatically change our food system to try and lower these risks. And it comes back to that intersectionality that you were talking about. You know, these factory farmings, they're clearly very bad for the environment. They're very bad for the animals in them. And they also pose this really quite serious human health risk as well.
Yeah, no, thank you for all of that. So for people who are listening and might feel like disheartened and, well, what do I do? What can people who are listening from anywhere in the world do to counter all of the things that we talked about, to protect ourselves, to protect wildlife, to protect the animals that are going through this? Is there anything that comes to mind that people can do right now?
I think one of the biggest things we can do is to dramatically decrease, if not entirely remove, animals and animal products from our plates. I heard a statistic, it sort of blew my mind, that if the whole world went vegan tomorrow, and I'm not suggesting that we should, but if the whole world went vegan tomorrow, we would save a land area equivalent to the whole of the United States, Europe, China, and Australia combined. And that gives enormous potential for rewilding, for, you know, like mitigating all of these terrible environmental impacts that we're talking about. I don't think that we necessarily have to be that dramatic, but I think there is certainly something to be said about a dramatic shift in our animal protein consumption and needing to scale that back. And I think policymakers are also responsible for this. You know, I said earlier, people think of climate change and they immediately go to transport. And that's because that's what our policymakers are saying. So we really need to push them and push this onto the agenda, because I think it's, you know, more than anything, it's a risk to all of those things that we described earlier, to the environment, to animals, to humans as well. So keeping animals off your plate, for sure, is probably the biggest thing you can do. I would love to see people joining our campaigns. We talked about, you know, where we see kinder farming practices, we're probably also likely to see a greater kindness towards the environment. So your listeners can join and make a difference for animals by joining our Fast Action Network. It's a really simple way of connecting with companies and asking them to make these changes. It's fastactionnetwork.com, and it's just like online actions that are really simple to do. It's made really easy for you, but allows you to make that fight for the animals. You can volunteer with the Humane League, and that can be volunteering to help directly influence policies of big companies, but also demanding legislation or empowering others to take action and to leave animals off their plates. And of course, without generous donations from our supporters, none of our work is possible at all. So anyone with the means to give, then donation truly helps to make the world of a difference for animals.
Yeah, and for anyone listening, we will have all the links that we discussed today in the description podcast. So you'll be able to just go in, listen, and click easily below. So feel free to check out the description after you listen. And then kind of a last question that I love to ask people as being the hopeful environmentalist is, what brings you hope for our collective future and planet? Could literally be anything that brings you hope.
Well, I've got to really keep it to the animal welfare scene. And I just really do have hope. I'm seeing the progress that we have in the US right now. Like 10 years ago, 5% of the that eggs produced in the US were from catering systems. Now it's 40%. That's a huge shift. In Europe, we've got 60% cage-free. We're seeing this shift all of the time. We've just got a major win in Asia, where 60% of the world's caged hens live. So, you know, I think seeing these gains and thinking about that intersectionality, I just have a real hope for a much kinder future in terms of how we treat animals and our impacts on the environment. And I really hope that policymakers start to listen and also, so it's not just the people that care bashing the corporates, as much as we love a good corporate campaign, but also those policymakers taking action as well.
I love that. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's so true. We need all pressure from all sides. We need policy, we need corporate pressure, we need collective action, we need all of it. So thank you for bringing all of those up. And thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. It was truly an amazing conversation.
Thanks so much, Taylor. Really enjoyed it.
And that wraps up this episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. I really would love you to now go back on your thoughts, the assignment that we talked about before, to just go back and either jot down or just look at the notes that you had written down or you were thinking about and just compare to what you know now. Or again, if any questions were raised for you, jot them down or just internally think about it. And again, if you have questions, feel free to reach out. And we will also be putting all of the things that we talked about and links that we talked about and resources in the description of this podcast. So feel free to check those out. Support the Humane League as you can with either donations, volunteering, signing petitions. There's so many ways to take action. So definitely check out those resources. And that is all I have for you guys today. So as always, stay hopeful and create positive change.